talk to you about the Black Women's Health Study, which is, and the title indicates, it's a follow-up study of African-American women, and it's a collaborative effort between Boston University and Howard University Cancer Center, which is located right here in Washington, D.C. So a nod to the investigators, which include my co-authors on this abstract, and the principal and co-principal investigators are Lynn Rosenberg, Lucille Adams Campbell, and Julie Palmer. So the main question that in academic circles we have to answer is, why is a Black Women's Health Study needed in the first place? And this question is the latest derivation on the question that was asked, why does women's health need to be studied earlier, when the gold standard was white males? So, but the real issue is that Black women suffer disproportionately from almost every major illness, and for every major illness, the rates of disease are sometimes 2, 3, and 4 times higher than that is observed in white women and also in other ethnic women. We sort of live with that disparity because there is really a dearth of that research behind why these differences exist. So the Black Women's Health Study, following on the model of other cohort studies of women, particularly the Nurses' Health Study, we wanted to establish a cohort that we could study over time to try to identify and quantify risk factors, both common risk factors for diseases such as breast cancer and other illnesses, and to use a self-administered model. So women are followed every 2 years. It's postal questionnaires and self-report. So our recruitment, where do you go to find Black women? Is it geographical? Is it, in work-based or not? But we went to Essence magazine, which is kind of as close as we could get to some sort of common meeting ground of Black women within the United States. Now, obviously, the readership of Essence magazine is predominantly Black women, but it's not exclusively Black women. And when we first started our recruitment, or in the midst of our recruitment, we did recruit a couple of white males as well, who were subscribers to Essence magazine. But they, right? Yeah. So starting in February of 95, we mailed out 400,000 questionnaires from the Essence magazine subscriber list. We tried to get geographical representation, and because Howard University, which is one of our co-investigational sites, is located here, we certainly wanted to make sure that the greater D.C., Maryland, Virginia areas were well represented. We also asked women from the other professional organizations like the National Education Association, Black Caucus, Black Nurses Association, but also we set aside about 50,000 questionnaires for the early responders to refer a friend or several friends. And from this, we received, like reams of paper, women sending in their sorority list, their church membership rosters. They really, it was a snowballing recruitment effort that paid off. We received about 71,000 questionnaires, but from which 59,000 fell within our age range of 21 to 69 years of age, and were completed in a method that indicated that they understood the questions, were able to respond to the questions, and that this would become our cohort to follow. So at baseline, our median age was about 38 years old. All regions of the United States are represented. All states are represented. The numbers certainly vary, and there is a great representation around large urban centers, but we boast people even in Alaska, in Guam, and any outpost that someone could subscribe to Essence magazine. And education, about 80% of our population has had some education beyond high school. Okay, so the baseline questionnaire was really not for the faint of heart. It was a 16-page questionnaire, which 4 pages were the NCI diet block questionnaire. So that was, it was really intense. And so women completed this, and these questionnaires, there was no pre-letter coming. It was really just, it was drop mail, and So there was definitely a want to be a part of this, and that is exactly what we want, because we're following them for quite some time now. And we are now in our sixth follow-up, and so we've been collecting data since 1995, and every 2 years we do update the exposures, go for the traditional risk factors, so personal characteristics, cigarette smoking, weight, use of oral contraceptives or other medications, and then we record the outcomes. So women will report incident disease, incident births, and we are also able to record death. Every 2 years on a questionnaire, we try to add additional questions that are based on whatever emerging hypotheses are. And a couple, one in particular that I will speak upon is the experiences and perceptions of racism. So, and that is, you know, as psychosocial measures become more and more have a greater role in, or a greater recognized role in illness, we were able to ask these questions. One of the things that certainly comes with Black women's health and the discrepancy or the disparity that exists is certainly the role of genes. And genes, you know, genetic studies sort of become the sort of the trash can of anything you can't explain. So, okay, the differences exist. We know that it must be genes, but the problem is it's never been studied, certainly not studied in a large systematic way. So we felt that our study would be a vehicle to begin this type of in-depth study. So we began collecting genomic samples from our participants in 2004, and we're actually just completing, about to wrap up collection. We've received 26,000 samples from our cohort, and the samples are collected using a mouthwash, rinse, and spit into a cup, and it's sent to the National Human Genome Center, which is located at Howard University locally. And, you know, our goal really is, you know, not to so much pinpoint or look for one defective gene, but really to be able to explore the gene-environment interactions. You know, genes, it's more likely that we have very small genes that exert a small effect, but in context of other type of environmental exposures. So we want to be positioned to be able to look at these interactions in a meaningful way. Just before I go on to this, I want to say that we are also have recently piloted collecting blood samples, because biomarkers are also important and are emerging certainly in studies such as the Nurses Health Study and the Women's Health Study, and having a role in women's health. So we feel that that's another arm of sample collection that we must explore. So we, from the self-reports, we have a much longer list of outcomes that have been reported, and the ones that we have are studying to date are listed here. We were funded initially through, or the parent grant is funded through the National Cancer Institute, so breast cancer and other cancers are from that grant, but also cardiovascular disease and the cardiovascular risk factors such as hypertension and obesity are also major study endpoints, or as also as risk factors, and diabetes, which has a large burden in the Black community, is also important. From the parent grant, we have spun a few ancillary studies. So again, diabetes, lupus, which also has very high disproportional rates within Black women, is one thing that we are studying. And we're also studying the, you know, looking at some of the genetic influences as well. Smoking cessation. We're looking at smoking behaviors over the 6 year follow-up cycle. How many people reported smoking and then not smoking and then smoking again, and what types of factors are related to smoking behaviors and patterns. And then finally, more recently, urban form and physical activity. One of the things that, you know, obesity is much higher in African American women than white women. And, you know, doctors are constantly saying, you've got to lose weight, you've got to lose weight, you need to be more physically active. However, what does the neighborhood that a woman lives in, what does that look like? And that is definitely a factor that's near and dear to my heart in terms of how neighborhoods vary. That really is, you know, probably the most segregated and different thing between Black and white women, is where they live. and yet that doesn't get factored in to the physical exam, for example. So I'll give an example of some of the other work that we've done with that as well. Here is our website, and you know, we have published over 50 papers, you know, in peer-reviewed journals, most of them epidemiological journals, but also some practice journals. And we have various outcomes, but I would definitely invite you to please look at the website. And to the back, I put one of our newsletters. We publish newsletters for our participants every 6 months to keep them abreast of findings in the study. And you can also get the website from that. But I'll talk about a couple of these. And that is particularly from the perceptions and experiences of racism. And we used a couple of questionnaire items that were developed by David Williams, who is University of Michigan now. He's Harvard University. And Nancy Krieger has done some work with these types of questions as well. And we tried to measure on a couple of domains, and particularly your day-to-day racism, the things that you encounter on a daily basis. So getting poor service, being treated with as if you're not intelligent, people actually acting as if they're afraid of you, as if you're dishonest, you know, kind of like shopping while black, being followed around. That's, you know, one of the things that happens, and people acting as if they're better than you. And then we have some frequencies here that go from never to constantly. And from these, we put together a summary variable. We looked at, you know, how many of the nevers that they reported versus the weeklies and so on, and came up with a summary variable score that we were able to break into quartiles. We had another set of questions that looked at what we considered institutional racism, so unfair treatment on the job and obtaining housing and by the police. And for this, we also created a summary variable that quantified the response pattern, so it, whether saying no to all three or yes to all three and in between. And this was sort of a way to try to fine-tune what this variable might have been measuring. But we looked at racism in relation to a couple, racism in terms of several outcomes. One of the first that we published on was racism in preterm birth. Again, preterm birth, one of the number one risk factors for preterm birth is black race. Why? It just, you know, it is. And, you know, there has been very little research done on this. So we looked at this within our population, and we found that among the women who had less than 12 years of education, so the least educated women in our sample, those who reported receiving poor service on a weekly basis had, you know, over threefold increased risk of having an early birth, a preterm birth. People who treated them with fear or if they were not intelligent also had an increased risk. So, you know, one of the things that you can sort of see is through the eyes of some woman who's trying to get prenatal care. And, you know, and you're feeling this as you are there seeking care. So, you know, this is, these are some real problems. And that, you know, it does, although we saw this association most strongly in the least educated women, it's also still an issue for the most educated women. We still see this in large national data provided by CDC and other agencies that study preterm birth. So it's not just limited to least educated women. Uterine fibroids are a condition that, again, disproportionately affect black women. That can certainly be a risk factor for preterm birth. You know, if you have fibroids of large enough size, they begin to compete for space with a growing fetus. And certainly, even within when pregnancy is not indicated, these can cause severe pain, distress, sometimes even rupture, depending on how they're located. And women live with these. They actually, you know, live with them, and it's quite a burden in terms of pain and comfort. And so we looked at this in relation to with racism as a risk factor. So again, we saw more modest risk factors or relative risks, but almost consistently significant increases according to the frequency of reports of racism in their day-to-day and other lives institutionally. recently, we have published on racism and breast cancer, again, breast cancer being a major risk factor. And again, we're seeing an increase, and then we're also seeing this increases among the younger women as well. So, I just want to quickly talk about some other psychosocial, particularly residential neighborhoods, which I mentioned a few minutes ago. And so these neighborhoods we sort of take for granted, but they do have a very strong effect on our daily life. But more importantly, they differ by racial composition. So we want to look at the residential neighborhood composition of the women in our study. So we linked their baseline addresses to the 2000 census, and we followed the work of others and looked at a number of block group variables, but particularly median housing value. And we found in this analysis that overall there was an increase, and this increase held if you were a woman who lived in a low-income neighborhood, controlling for age, body mass index, education, all of these personal risk factors, you still had an almost 30% increased risk of developing hypertension. And hypertension is a risk factor for a number of things, including preterm birth, including cardiovascular outcomes. But most importantly, even if you were a thin woman, or you exercised often, or you were a young woman, or you had a higher education, or even higher income, your risk was still increased if you were living in a low SES neighborhood. And this is of particular interest among black women because, unlike their white peers, as they achieve education, they are still less likely to be moving into these suburban enclaves where, you know, you get all of these things such as high-functioning grocery stores, walkable space, outdoor recreation space, safe place for children. And so this was a great interest for us to explore this. So just in summary, the Black Women's Health Study, we feel is a valuable tool, just as valuable as the other cohort studies in terms of providing a lot of information and constantly providing, you know, we're not at the point where we're able to end this and, you know, say that walk away and say we've figured out everything. We really need to continue to study these issues on an ongoing basis, and we hope to, you know, continue to address a number of risk factors, both the traditional risk factors, psychosocial, genetic, and to lead to more effective prevention programs. It's particularly for, you know, that physicians and health planning, that certainly on the terms of neighborhood, health planning should involve a redevelopment authority, a local redevelopment authority. How a neighborhood is built, situated, the things that are there, affects the health of everyone within it. And if we want to be serious about public health, we have to consider all of the